back in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Today, we have a show that stems a little close to our former home back in Salt Lake City, but it's here in New York, and it's a wonderful new production. And joining us to talk to us about this show, we have the co-directors Jeremiah Maestas and Stephen Kaliski. They're here to talk to us about Adjusted Realists in association with Weber State University's production of Red Days. It's playing May 31st through June 9th at the Jeffrey and Paula Girl Theater, ART New York Theater. And tickets and more information can be found at eventbrite.com. Not only is this a special show for us as Weber State University is involved, you know, but more importantly, the show itself is fantastic. So the perfect people who can speak on this, of course, are our guests. So with that, let us go ahead and welcome on Jeremiah, Stephen. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
Very excited.
I'm thrilled that you're here. I'm thrilled that we are talking about this great new work, Red Days. Jeremiah, if I could start with you first, could you tell us a little bit about what this show is about?
Sure. So a new play written by Rachel Bublitz, also from the Salt Lake, Utah area. She's written a play about the sort of deteriorating air quality in that area around the Salt Lake. And as we all know, we've read in the news, the Salt Lake is drying up and the air quality is getting worse and worse. And so this is set in sort of the not too distant future, focused around a young girl who is in high school in that area. And she is a cross-country runner. She also has some health problems due to asthma, breathing problems due to all of these problems with the air. Her mother is the cross-country coach, who is very stern, very ambitious, very much wants her daughter to be all that she can be, and is pretty aggressive about that. And so it's sort of set in this town where we're faced with the problems that this young runner is facing. Also around a radio station and a great radio personality who's kind of narrating us through what's going on in this area. But it's a real kind of push and pull between the mother and the daughter, maybe a possible love interest. And then Rachel has a really great way of adding some beautiful poetic kind of departures from the real world of this play. And so it's got some reality to it. And then it's got some beautiful dreamlike sequences as well.
That is so wonderful. I love that. So Stephen, I kind of want to snowball off of that idea and come to you and ask, you know, how is it that you came upon this piece?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. So it gets a little bit to our identity as a company. You know, where I have really a group of friends. I think that's how a lot of theater communities form. We were all based in New York in the mid-2010s and did some shows together. And a lot of us have dispersed. And one of our company members, Jessica Greenberg, is a professor. She got a tenure at Weber State University. And that's where she also encountered this really supportive theater department that was really interested in having their students do some work for us out in New York in the summer as kind of an apprenticeship, because they don't have a lot of opportunities out there to come out to New York and work on a professional show. So we had this foundation, and we've used this model for several shows already where the production is really, you know, half sort of New York-based professionals and half student talent from Weber State. So this was the first year that we, you know, actually decided to go in the route of, you know, with a lot of student activism and interest out at Weber to honor a play that really spoke to things that are on the minds of Utahns, especially young Utahns. And Jessica, our company member, met up with Rachel, the playwright, and found that she really had this perfect play in development in her back pocket. So we gave it a read and just really felt like it was perfect for the kind of work that we do. I mean, we don't have a really strict aesthetic. I would say we're often looking at plays about, you know, as our name would suggest, about slightly futuristic or slightly adjusted realities that maybe veer into comedy, absurdism. Last time we did a show, it veered into Greek tragedy. And this play is one that I think, unlike a lot of climate dystopias, it's something that's very specific and regionally specific And in a way that's not far-fetched. It's a lot of it is already happening. It gives us a sort of concrete place to have a discussion about the impact of climate change in a particular part of our country that doesn't feel vague or distant or overstated. It really feels grounded in reality. So yeah, really kind of lucky that just based on our personnel as a company, we were able to find this local hook in Utah.
That is amazing. I love that. I love the thoughts that are being tossed out about how and why this work is being done. This is wonderful. Stephen, sticking with you first on this question, I know we are about a month away from opening, but I'm curious to know, what has it been like developing this piece?
Yeah, one of the highlights of this collaboration between largely, I'll say, East Coast artists, because I'm based in North Carolina myself, but we have this built-in program with Weber State where a group of us will go out way early in pre-production. We'll go out for a few days to Ogden, Utah, and do a kind of intensive workshop with the students out there. Some of it is related to the show, some of it is just general theater biz, theater training stuff. But that's also a period of time when we can dig into the development of the play. So, you know, a couple of years ago, it was my own play we were working on, and it was an opportunity for me to hear the show out loud and get some feedback as I was in the drafting process. For this production, you know, Rachel already had a draft of the play. She'd already been through some developmental processes externally. But we were really interested in, you know, this is a play about young people. How can we really, you know, find some good matches with the actors at Weber? So we were, you know, auditioning for the show, and our few days out there culminated in just a sit down reading for the public of the show, where it was at the moment, so that we could get a sense dramaturgically of what was working and what still needed a little bit of TLC. It was already in great shape, so Rachel's adjustments have been pretty, you know, on the margins and minor. But we were also really able to get a sense of how the show was connecting, you know, with the audience. You know, this being a Utah audience, of like, does this feel like it's telling a story that is honoring what you all experience out here? We were able to have a panel of Weber State professors from environmental studies and anthropology talk about the social impacts of climate change. And we're hoping to replicate that in New York and have some real experts come and do talkbacks, information sessions with our audiences. But I would just say, you know, development of the show is really concentrated in that week. Other than that, you know, we've been kind of all back and forth remotely since we're in different parts of the world, getting ready and getting excited, trading ideas about what we want this to look like.
It's wonderful. Jeremiah, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, just it's been really great because we work with students at Weber State who are also our designers, our costume designer, our set designer. Jess Greenberg is our lighting designer. It's really fun, even though we're not in the same city together, we're not in the same place. We are collaborating via Zoom with regular production meetings and sharing ideas versus email. And we're really just, everything is percolating and some really great ideas are coming that way. So it's not that we have to be in the same place at the same time, but we really are finding some really great storytelling elements through design, through some dramaturgy that are coming together. And we're like Steve said, we're really focusing on trying to get a talkback panel or two together while we're here, because we really stimulated some great conversation back there with our audience about some ideas that this play stimulates. And you know, as we had the crazy wildfire air here in New York City last year, and it turned the skies orange for 2 days. There's a lot of stuff that we can connect to here that is also like, wow, this affects us and we should be talking about it. And is it just about, oh, what's the next new mask we should get? How do we actually fix the problem? And those are some really big questions that are being asked, especially by this young girl, Diana, in the play, that it's like, yes, this problem is going on, but there are fixes to it, not just putting new band-aids or figuring out how to deal with it, how to live with it. How do we actually fix the problem? So we're really diving into that stuff and finding some good solutions for storytelling together as a team.
That is fantastic. I love that. Jeremiah, I want to ask you, is there a message or a thought you hope audiences will take away from the show?
Yeah, it's such a a good question, especially for this type of play. Because this mother and daughter have such an intense relationship, the mother is really pushing her daughter to be something better, to be something good, pushing her to go out and run in this terrible air and do something that she knows is harmful for her daughter. The daughter knows that it's harmful for her. There's a lot of this ambition involved. And I think it asks the audience to really think about, where should you be pushing yourself in life? What are those goals that mean something? Do they mean something for yourself? Are they just self-related? Are they for the better good? You know, because both of these people in this play are thinking about good things, but then they're sort of also not thinking about maybe what's right in front of them. And I think that that's a really important question for the audience to be thinking about. And again, Rachel has some really beautiful poetic departures from reality in this that really kind of allow the audience to sink in a different level about maybe what these messages are of music and poetry and different types of ideas that really help to sink in these ideas of, what are we really doing here? What is our mission? What should we be doing? Should we be pushing harder, working towards something else? What are we doing to each other in families, in our communities? And I think that this play is really going to get to the audiences with those types of questions.
I love those ideas. Those are absolutely fantastic. Brilliant. My final question for this first part, I'm going to throw your way, Stephen. And that, of course, is who do you help have access to Red Days?
Yeah, it's something that's coming up in Jeremiah's answers here, too, that something I really admire about this play is it's sort of a, you know, how do we live ethically in difficult times? But how do we adjust our mindset, especially, you know, for our younger generations, of living in a balance of life goes on and you've got to live your life versus you understand that you're living in an extraordinary moment that might require more of you than seems fair. And I hope that, you know, this is a piece that can live, you know, beyond our production, that can, it seems ideally situated for the sort of play to get produced at colleges across the country, that it can really be a discussion piece or even an activist piece for, like, okay, our lives are complicated, we need to do something and we need to fight, but we also need to embrace that, you know, we will still have our love life and our personal life and our family life and our sports and our arts and all the things that make us, you know, function as human beings, the way that we breathe beyond the air, but we breathe kind of into a deeper part of our soul. I hope that it can be on the surface a pretty bleak story. And I think that genre in particular, climate genre of storytelling, is it's a downer, you know, like it's scary and it is kind of leaves you feeling like, okay, what's the point? I think those questions come up in this show, but I don't want it to be a fatalist sort of, well, you know, I guess we're screwed. I think it's more of we deal with adversity, but we forge ahead. And I hope that's, you know, what our younger audiences, you know, particularly our high school and teenage, you know, college aged audiences can take away from it.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit more. And I'm having an absolute blast. This is such a fantastic conversation. And I want to start by asking the two of you our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past or are just some of your favorites? And Jeremiah, can I start with you first on that, please?
Oh, sure. I love this question. I am a huge fan of Sarah Rule. She is one of those storytellers who just transports me in her worlds. I had the great, great opportunity to work on her in The Next Room or The Vibrator Play back at Brooklyn College as a thesis project. And I know Steve actually got to direct that with some dear friends of ours as well. And, you know, the worlds that she creates, the characters, the The magical realism to me is storytelling that it just speaks to the soul and to the heart. And I love that she can take some classical literature and some very classical plays from our history as human beings and set them into worlds that we can, that immediately speak to us in our modern day lives and into our modern day worlds. And so anything and everything that Sarah Rule's doing, I'm on board and I'm following her wherever she's going. I just speaking out from my little backyard here in Brooklyn in the Crown Heights, I love everything that Theater for a New Audience does. It's one of my favorite places in New York City, in Brooklyn. I love, you know, they just did a great, great Waiting for Godot there that was really pretty spectacular. A few years back, Diane Wiest in Happy Days was probably one of the most amazing theatrical experiences of my life. Again, I just, their ability to find these treasures of our theatrical storytelling and bring them to life on stage is just really fun. And I love that I can walk there and walk back home after a show. It's one of my favorite things to do in Brooklyn. So those are high on my list for sure.
Fantastic, fantastic names on that list. Absolutely gorgeous. Well, Stephen, what about you? What are, who inspires you?
Yeah, I have some unusual answers because most of my wheelhouse is in new works. But I mean, I guess my Sarah Rule-esque answer is I love Will Eno and everything that he does. So one of our wedding readings was from Will Eno's Title Indeed, which is very refreshing after most wedding readings that you hear. When I was teaching at Brooklyn College, where I got my MFA, where I met Jeremiah, I was teaching an Anton Chekhov scene study to the BFA actors there. That's where I really fell in love with Chekhov. And I think something I find inspiring about that work is it's so often done really poorly. And I think when you have an opportunity to work on a Chekhov piece that's done well, you learn something about the human condition. I think so many of those plays are about agitation and boredom and sort of inertia, which you can treat as kind of mopiness, but then when you really find the heart of them, it's about kind of just the complexities of not fundamentally getting the thing that you want and how that can really stir you into this incredible, passionate, fully human frenzy. And then you got all these characters darting around on stage, bumping into each other, not getting what they want, looking for that somewhere else, still not getting what they want. And it turns into something that's, you know, you're laughing and crying at the same time. And you get the multiplicity of everything about being a human being. So I'm always inspired by that. And I also, you know, in my own writing, I've done some riffs on Greek tragedy. I don't spend a lot of time like producing or thinking about, you know, the ancient Greek world, but what I do love about it is the way that you can find something epic. I think a lot of our storytelling these days can be very small and navel gazing even, or about aspects of us that are reducing how we can come across as something extraordinary, and that our problems are extraordinary, that our existences are huge. And I love the epic dimension of the ancient Greek canon. And I try to remember that sometimes when I'm looking for new work that feels like it's reaching to a higher plane. My theater in North Carolina, Davidson Community Players, I'm the executive director of it. It's one of the big theaters in the Charlotte area. But I noticed your Fun Home poster on your wall. Like, we just did our own Fun Home production recently, and that to me was like an ascendance of something that reached to a higher level, you know, by both mixing in the intimate with the epic scale of what's going on in these people's lives, and was the kind of show that really shifted, I think, what theater could be for a lot of the patrons in our community. So that was one of those great jolts where I'm like, yes, I'm inspired again. I want to keep that going.
That is amazing. That's a wonderful list as well. I love it. And now we have arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, and I'm so excited to learn yours. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
I'm going to jump in right away because I got a go-to here. And it's a celebration of, sometimes you go to the TKTS booth and you get a ticket and you end up front row, mezzanine, half filled theater for no explicable reason, but you kind of feel like you're all alone in the best seat in the house. And that's where I was when I saw Jerusalem on Broadway with Mark Rylance. Gosh, I couldn't think of the year. Maybe this is 2012, 2013, something like that. And that was one of those shows for me. His entire ending monologue at the close of Jerusalem has become a vocal warm-up, an incantation, a way that, you know, in my acting classes, we summon a higher theatrical superpower. But I just felt like I was all alone with the greatest actor in the world for 3 hours in a random afternoon matinee. I'll never forget that.
What an amazing memory. That is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. Jeremiah, what about you? What is your favorite theater memory?
Oh, man. Just hearing Steve, I had a very similar experience with Jerusalem as well and went back 3 times because I was transported. But that's one of them. But another for me is when the great Jack O'Brien directed the Coast of Utopia trilogy at Lincoln Center. I was, and still have been, assisting Jack off and on in his personal life and his professional life for quite a few years now, since the Old Globe. And I really got to sit in and watch that entire trilogy come together at Lincoln Center. And the day that I got to sit in that theater for the entire day and watch the marathon of all three of those productions, I was numb and I was transported and I was exhausted. And I think I will never be the same after that. I mean, watching that scale of theatrical production happen in front of you and being swept away over and over and over again with each one of those plays was, I mean, that's a major thing to witness in your life as a theater person, as anybody. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I had, you know, read the plays and I'd been watching some rehearsals, but to actually see it come together and do it back to back all in one day was one of those mind-altering, ever-changing experiences in my life, because you see these amazing, that company of those amazing actors age throughout the process of the storytelling. And what they did on that stage in the Vivian Beaumont was just breathtaking. So that for me, I think, is the pinnacle of theater memory. That's the one for sure.
That is an amazing memory as well. Oh, thank you so much for that. Thank you both so much for those fantastic memories. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
I'll put a little local, a little shout out, since you are no longer exclusively covering New York theater, but theater around the globe. I work in a very interesting theatrical community in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is an interesting theater town. We're the largest, you know, we're the 15th largest city in the country, but we don't have any LORT regional theaters here. So it's there are historical reasons for that. And it's, you know, folks have tried to change it over the years. But, you know, as far as local professional talent, we've got a really deep talent pool, but we're a little scattered in terms of, you know, rallying around a single entity or, you know, achieving that prestigious regional theater presence. But I'm very proud of my organization, Davidson Community Players, which is about a 9-show season every year. We get some of the best actors in the region to come work for us. We just did Fun Home. I'll be directing our holiday show, Miss Bennett Christmas at Pemberley, a Lauren Gunderson play this December. We've got Stephen Karam's The Humans coming up. And we're just trying to, you know, make the best theater that we possibly can here in North Carolina, because we need it down here and get a great cultural community, and really excited about, I think we're one of the top 5 places people are moving to in the United States, not moving from, but moving to. So we're a booming place and really exciting landscape to be in right now.
Fantastic. That's amazing. Oh, wonderful to hear. Jeremiah, anything for you?
Yes, I am actually getting ready to start rehearsing with Jack O'Brien on a new upcoming Broadway play, new play. It hasn't been officially announced yet, so I can't I can't say anything more about it, but it's announced anytime now, any few days, but I'm going to be working on that soon as a production assistant and assisting Jack O'Brien. And also for Adjusted Realists, we're beginning to workshop a new play with Eliza Bent, who wrote a play for us that we produced a few years ago called The Beyoncé in the same theater at the Girl at ART. And again, she is one of those whimsical, wonderful, up-and-coming playwrights. Great humor, great view on character, and really has a great take on Chekhov. And so she's dabbling around with an adaptation of The Cherry Orchard for us. And so we're going to workshop and play around with some of her text that she has this summer in June. So really looking forward to that. And if it's something that really stimulates and it looks like it's moving in the right direction, it might be a piece that Adjusted Realists will produce maybe next year or in the near future. So really looking forward to that.
That is amazing. That is so exciting. Both of you have some great things in the pipeline that we need to keep our thumb on. So with that, my final question for the two of you is, if our listeners would like more information about Red Days or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Yeah, for Red Days, I would go to adjustedrealist.com, which will also link you to the Eventbrite ticket site that you mentioned earlier, but we'll have all the information about that show there. For my own artistry and personal projects, stephenkaliski.com. And if you want to look into the work we're doing at my theater in North Carolina, davidsoncommunityplayers.org. Those are the best places to follow me and the work that I'm doing. And would love to, my contact info is on all of those sites. So I'm always happy to connect with your listeners.
And yeah, I would say our website has all of our bios, some really good information about what we've done, contact information on the well as well. JeremiahMaestas.com is my website. I've got some info on there and contact information, and would love to hear from anyone. But I just, again, thank you so much for this opportunity. This has been amazing.
Wonderful. Well, Jeremiah and Stephen, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing this fantastic new work that I cannot wait to see, and just sharing this wonderful insight with us. It's been such a joy speaking with the two of you. So thank you both for your time today.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having us.
My guests today have been the co-directors, Jeremiah Maestas and Stephen Kaliski, who are here to talk about Adjusted Realists in association with Weber State University's presentation of Red Days. The show is playing May 31st through June 9th at Jeffrey and Paula Girl Theater, ART New York Theater, and you can get your tickets and information by visiting eventbrite.com. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But run, don't walk. Get your tickets now for this limited run. Come join us at a Stage Whisper night out at the theater. We're going to be there. This is a fantastic show. Head to eventbrite.com and get your tickets for Red Days, playing May 31st through June 9th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.